Side 4.
Tate signaled, "Danger, danger, danger."
"Tensor," said the tensor.
A secretary appeared at Maria's elbow.
"Madam," he lisped, "a slight contretemps."
"What is it?"
"The cheerful boy, Gallon Cheerful."
Tate's face constricted.
"What about him?"
Maria peeped through the crowd.
"Left of the fountain. An impostor, madame. I've peeped him. He has no invitation. He's a college student. He bet he could crash the party. He intends to steal a picture of you as proof."
"Of me?" Maria said, staring through the windows in young Cherville's clothes.
"What does he think of me?"
"Well, madam, he's extremely difficult to probe. I think he'd like to steal more from you than your picture."
"Oh, would he?"
Maria cackled delightedly.
"He would, madam. Shall he be removed?"
"No."
Maria glanced once more at the muscular young man, then turned away.
"He'll get his proof."
"And it won't be stolen,"
Reich said.
"Jealous, jealous," she squawked.
"Let's dine."
In response to Tate's urgent sign, Reich stepped aside momentarily.
"Reich, you've got to give up."
"What the hell?"
"The Cherville boy."
"What about him?"
"He's a second."
"God damn."
"He's precocious. Brilliant. I met him at Powell's last Sunday. Maria Beaumont never invites peepers to her house. I'm only in on your pass. I was depending on that."
"And this peeper kid has to be the one to crash. God damn."
"Give it up, Reich."
"Maybe I can stay away from him."
"Reich, I can block the social secretaries. They're only thirds, but I can't guarantee to handle them and a second, too, even if he is only a kid."
"He's young. He may be too nervous to do any clever peeping, but I can't promise."
"I'm not quitting,"
Reich growled.
"I can't. I'll never get a chance like this again. Even if I knew I could, I wouldn't quit. I've got the stink of de Courtney in my nostrils.
Reich, you never..."
"Don't argue. I'm going through with it."
Reich turned his scowl full on Tate's nervous face.
"I know you're looking for a chance to squirm out of this, but you won't. We're trapped in this together, right down the line, from here to demolition."
He shaped his distorted face into a frozen smile and rejoined his hostess on a couch alongside one of the tables. It was still the custom for couples to feed one another at these affairs, but the gesture that had originated in Oriental courtesy and generosity had degenerated into erotic play. The morsels of food were accompanied by tongue-touched fingers, and were as often offered between the lips. The wine was tasted mouth to mouth. Sweets were given even more intimately. Reich endured it all with a seething impatience, waiting for the vital word from Tate. Part of Tate's intelligence work was to locate de Courtney's hiding place in the house. He watched the little peeper drift through the crowd of diners, probing, prying, searching, until he at last returned with a negative shake of his head and gestured towards Maria Beaumont. Clearly Maria was the only source of information, but she was now too excited by sensuality to be easily probed. It was another in a never-ending series of crises that had to be met by the killer instinct. Reich arose and crossed towards the fountain. Tate intercepted him.
"What are you up to, Reich?"
"Isn't it obvious? I've got to get the Cherville boy off her mind."
"How?"
"Is there any way but one?"
"God's sake, Reich, don't go near the boy."
"Get out of my way."
Reich radiated a burst of savage compulsion that made the peeper recoil. He signaled in fright, and Reich tried to control himself.
"It's taking chances, I know. But the odds aren't as long as you think. In the first place, he's young and green. In the second place, he's a crasher and scared.
In third place, he can't be flying full jets, or he wouldn't have let the fag secretaries peep him so easily. Have you got any conscious control? Can you double think? I've got that song on my mind, and enough trouble to make double thinking a pleasure. Now get the hell out of the way, and stand by to peep Maria Beaumont. Cherville was eating alone alongside the fountain, clumsily attempting to appear to belong.
Pip,
said Reich. Pop, said Cherville.
Bim,
said Reich. Bam, said Cherville. With the latest fad in informality disposed of, Reich eased himself down alongside the boy.
I'm Ben Reich.
I'm Galley Cherville. I mean, Gallen. He was visibly impressed by the name of Reich.
Tension, apprehension, and dissension. That damn song,
Reich muttered.
Heard it for the first time the other day. Can't get it out of my mind. Maria knows you're a phony, Cherville.
Oh, no, Reich nodded.
Tension, apprehension.
Should I start running?
What about the picture?
You know about that, too. There must be a peeper in the house.
Two of them are social secretaries.
People like you are their job. What about that picture, Mr. Reich? I got 50 credits riding on the line. You ought to know what a bet means. You're a financier.
Glad I'm not a peeper, eh? Never mind, I'm not insulted. See that arch? Go straight through and turn right. You'll find a study. The walls are lined with Maria's portraits, all in synthetic stones. Help yourself. She'll never miss one.
The boy leaped up, scattering food. Thanks, Mr. Reich. Someday I'll do you a favor.
Such as?
You'd be surprised. I happen to be a... He caught himself and blushed. You'll find out, sir. Thanks again. He began weaving his way across the floor towards the study.
Four, sir. Three, sir. Two, sir. One.
Reich turned to his hostess. Naughty lover, she said. Who have you been feeding? I'll tear her eyes out.
The Cherville boy,
Reich answered.
He asked me where you keep your pictures.
Ben, you didn't tell him.
Sure did,
Reich grinned.
He's on his way to get one now. Then he'll take off. You know I'm jealous.
She leaped from the couch and sailed towards the study.
Bam,
said Reich. By 11 o'clock, the ritual of dining had aroused the company to a point of intensity that required solitude and darkness for release. Maria Beaumont had never failed her guests, and Reich hoped she would not fail tonight. She had to play the sardine game. He knew it when Tate returned from the study with concise directions for locating the hidden de Courtenay. I don't know how you got away with it, Tate whispered. You're broadcasting bloodlust on every wavelength of the TP band. He's here, alone, no servants, only two bodyguards provided by Maria. Atkins was right. He's dangerously sick.
To hell with that. I'll cure him. Where is he?
Go through the west arch. Turn right. Upstairs. Through overpass. Turn right. Picture gallery. Door between paintings of the Rape of Lucretia and the Rape of the Sabine Women.
Sounds typical.
Open the door. Up a flight of steps to an anteroom. Two guards in the anteroom. De Courtenay's inside. It's the old wedding suite her grandfather built.
By God, I'll use that suite again. I'll marry him to murder, and I'll get away with it, little Gus. Don't think I won't.
The gilt corpse began to clamor for attention. Flushed and shining with perspiration, standing in the glare of a pink light on the dais between the two fountains, Maria clapped her hands for silence. Her moist palms beat together, and the echoes roared in Reich's ears.
Death, death, death.
Darlings, 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 she cried. We're going to have so much fun tonight. We're going to provide our own entertainment. A subdued groan went up from the guests, and a drunken voice shouted, "I'm just one of the tourists." Through the laughter, Maria said, "Naughty lovers, don't be disappointed. We're going to play a wonderful old game, and we're going to play it in the dark." The company cheered up as the overhead lights began to dim and disappear. The dais still blazed, and in the light Maria produced a tattered volume, Reich's Gift.
Tension.
Maria turned the pages slowly, blinking at the unaccustomed print.
Apprehension.
"It's a game," Maria cried, "called Sardine. Isn't that too adorable?"
She took the bait. "She's on the hook. In 3 minutes, I'll be invisible."
Reich felt his pockets, the gun, the rhodopsin.
"Tension, apprehension, and ascension have begun."
"One player," Maria read, "is selected to be it. That's gonna be me. All the lights are extinguished, and the it hides anywhere in the house." As Maria struggled through the directions, the great hall was reduced to pitch darkness, with the exception of the single pink beam on the stage. Successively, each player, finding the sardine, joins them, until all are hidden in one place, and the last player, who is the loser, is left to wander alone in the dark. Maria closed the book. "And darlings, we're all going to feel sorry for the loser, because we're going to play this funny old game in a darling new way." As the last light on the dais melted away, Maria stripped off her gown and displayed the astonishing nude body that was a miracle of pneumatic surgery. "We're going to play sardine like this," she cried. The last light blinked out. There was a roar of exultant laughter and applause, followed by a multiple whisper of cloth drawn across skin. Occasionally there came the sound of a rip, then muttered exclamations and more laughter. Reich was invisible at last. He had half an hour to slip up into the house, find and kill de Courtney, and then return to the game. Tate was committed to pinning the Pieper secretaries out of the line of his attack. It was safe. It was foolproof, except for the Chervil boy. He had to take that chance. He crossed the main hall and jostled into bodies at the west arch. He went through the arch into the music room and turned right, groping for the stairs. At the foot of the stairs, he was forced to climb over a barrier of bodies with octopus arms that tried to pull him down. He ascended the stairs, 17 eternal steps, and felt his way through a closed tunnel overpass, papered with velour. Suddenly he was seized, and a woman crushed herself against him. "Hello, Sardine," she whispered in his ear. Then her skin became aware of his clothes. "Oh," she exclaimed, and felt the hard outlines of the gun in his breast pocket. "What's that?" He slapped her hand away. "Clever up, Sardine," she giggled. "Get out of the can." He divested himself of her and bruised his nose against the dead end of the overpass. He turned right, opened a door, and found himself in a vaulted gallery over 50 feet long. The lights were extinguished here, too. But the luminescent paintings, glowing under ultraviolet spotlights, filled the gallery with a virulent glow. It was empty. Between a vivid Lucretia and a horde of Sabine women was a flush door of polished bronze. Reich stopped before it, removing the tiny rhodopsin ionizer from his back pocket, and attempted to poise the copper cube between his thumbnail and forefinger. His hands were trembling violently. Rage and hatred boiled inside him, and his death lust shot image after image of an agonized de Courtney through his mind's eye.
"Christ," he cried. "He'd do it to me. He's tearing at my throat. I'm fighting for survival."
He made his orisons in fanatical multiples of 3 and 9.
"Stand by me, dear Christ. Today, tomorrow, and yesterday. Stand by me, stand by me, stand by me."
his fingers steadied. He poised the rhodopsin cap, then thrust open the bronze door, revealing 9 steps mounting to an anteroom. Reich snapped his thumbnail against the copper cube, as though he were trying to flip a penny to the moon. As the rhodopsin cap flew up into the anteroom, Reich averted his eyes. There was a cold purple flash. Reich leaped up the stairs like a tiger. The 2 Beaumont House guards were seated on the bench where he'd caught them. Their faces were sagging, their vision destroyed, their time sense abolished. If anyone entered and found the guards before he was finished, he was on the road to demolition. If the guards revived before he was finished, he was on the road to demolition. No matter what happened, it was a final gamble with demolition. Leaving the last of his sanity behind him, Reich pushed open a jeweled door and entered the wedding suite. Chapter 5. Reich found himself in a spherical room designed as the heart of a giant orchid. The walls were curling orchid petals. The floor was a golden calyx. The chairs, tables, and couches were orchid and gold, but the room was old. The petals were faded and peeling. The golden tile floor was ancient, and the tessellations were splitting. There was an old man lying on the couch, musty and wilted, like a dried weed. It was de Courtenay, stretched out like a corpse. Reich slammed the door in rage.
"You're not dead already, you bastard!" he exploded. "You can't be dead!"
The faded man started up, staring, then arose painfully from the couch, his face breaking into a smile.
"Still alive!"
Reich cried exultantly, looking at the faded man. De Courtenay stepped towards Reich, smiling, his arms outstretched as though welcoming a prodigal son. Alarmed again, Reich growled,
"Are you deaf?"
The old man shook his head.
"You speak English,"
Reich shouted.
"You can hear me. You can't understand me. I'm Reich, Van Reich of Monarch."
De Courtenay nodded, still smiling. His mouth worked soundlessly. His eyes glistened with sudden tears.
"What the hell's the matter with you? I'm Ben Reich. Ben Reich. Do you know me? Answer me."
De Courtenay shook his head and tapped his throat. His mouth worked again. Rusty sounds came. Then words as faint as dust.
"Ben, dear Ben, waited so long. Now can't talk. My throat can't talk."
Again he attempted to embrace Reich.
"Keep off, you crazy idiot."
Bristling, Reich stepped around De Courtenay like an animal, his hackles raised, the murder boiling in his blood. De Courtenay's mouth formed the words,
"Dear Ben, you know why I'm here. What are you trying to do, make love to me?"
Reich laughed.
"You crafty old pimp, am I supposed to turn soft for your chewing?"
His hand lashed out. The old man reeled back from the slap and fell into an orchid chair that looked like a wound.
"Listen to me."
Reich followed De Courtenay and stood over him. He began to shout incoherently.
"This payoff been on the fire for years. And you want to rob me with a Judas kiss? Does murder turn the other cheek? If it does, embrace me, brother killer. Kiss death. Teach death love. Teach goodliness and shame and blood and..." "No. Wait.
He stopped short and shook his head, like a bull trying to cast off a halter of delirium.
"Ben," De Courtenay whispered in horror. "Listen, Ben. You've been in my throat for 10 years. There was room enough for both of us, Monarch and De Courtenay. All the room in time and space. But you wanted my blood, aim, my heart, my guts, and your lousy hands. The man with no face."
De Courtenay shook his head in bewilderment.
"No, Ben, no. Don't call me Ben. I'm no friend of yours. Last week, I gave you one more chance to wash in decency. Me, Ben Reich, I asked for armistice, begged for peace, merger. I begged like a screaming woman. My father would spit on me if he were alive. Every fighting Reich would blacken my face with contempt. But I asked for peace, didn't I? Hey! Didn't I?
Reich prodded De Courtney savagely.
Answer me!
De Courtney's face was blanched and staring. Finally, he whispered,
Yes, you asked. I accepted.
You what?
Accepted. Waited for years. Accepted.
Accepted?
De Courtney nodded. His lips formed the letters.
W-W-H-G.
What? W-W-H-G? Acceptance?
The old man nodded again. Reich shrieked with laughter.
You clumsy old liar! That's refusal, denial, rejection, war!
No, Ben, no.
Reich reached down and yanked De Courtney to his feet. The old man was frail and light, but his weight bruised Reich's arm, and the touch of the old skin burnt Reich's fingers.
So it's to be war, is it? Death?
De Courtney shook his head and tried to make signs.
No merger, no peace, death. That's the choice, eh?
Ben, no.
Will you surrender?
Yes,
De Courtney whispered.
Yes, Ben, yes.
Liar. Clumsy old liar,
Reich laughed.
But you're dangerous. I can see it. Protective mimicry, that's your trick. You imitate the idiots and trap us at your leisure, but not me, never.
I'm not your enemy, Ben.
No, Reich spat. You're not, because you're dead. You've been dead ever since I came into this orchid coffin, man with no face. Can you hear me screaming for the last time? You're finished forever.
Reich tore the gun out of his breast pocket. He touched the stud and it opened like a red steel flower. A faint groan escaped from De Courtney when he saw the weapon. He backed away in horror. Reich caught him and held him fast. De Courtney twisted in Reich's grasp, his face pleading, his eyes glazed and rheumy. Reich transferred his grasp to the back of De Courtney's thin neck and wrenched the head towards him. He had to fire through the open mouth for the trick to work. At that instant, one of the orchid petals swung open, and a half-dressed girl burst into the room. In a blaze of surprise, Reich saw the corridor behind her, a bedroom door standing open at the far end. The girl, nude under a frost silk gown hastily thrown on, yellow hair flying, dark eyes wide in alarm, a lightning flash of wild beauty.
Father, she screamed, for God's sake, Father.
She ran towards De Courtney. Reich swung quickly between them, never relaxing his hold on the old man. The girl stopped short, backed away, then darted to the left around Reich, screaming. Reich pivoted and cut viciously at her with the stiletto. She eluded him, but was driven behind the couch. Reich thrust the point of the stiletto between the old man's teeth and forced his jaws open.
No, she cried, no, for the love of Christ, Father!
She stumbled around the couch and ran towards her father again. Reich thrust the gun muzzle into De Courtney's mouth and pulled the trigger. There was a muffled explosion, and a gout of blood spurted from the back of De Courtney's head. Reich let the body drop and leaped for the girl. He caught her while she fought and screamed. Reich and the girl were screaming together. Reich shook with galvanic spasms that forced him to release the girl. The girl fell forward to her knees and crawled to the body. She moaned in pain as she snatched the gun from the mouth where it still hung. Then she crouched over the twitching body, silent, fixed, staring into the waxen face. Reich gasped for breath and beat his knuckles together painfully. When the roaring in his ears subsided, he propelled himself towards the girl, trying to arrange his thoughts and make split-second alterations in his plans. He had never counted on a witness. No one mentioned a daughter. God damn Tate. He'd have to kill the girl. She turned and shot a terror-stricken glance over her shoulder. Again that lightning flash of yellow hair, dark eyes, dark brows, wild beauty. She leaped to her feet, darted out of his sodden grasp, ran to the jeweled door, flung it open, and ran into the anteroom. As the door slowly closed, Reich had a glimpse of the guard still slumped on the bench, and the girl running silently down the stairs, with the gun in her hands, with demolition in her hands. Reich started. The clogged blood began pounding through his veins again. He reached the door in three strides, ran through and tore down the steps to the picture gallery. It was empty, but the door to the overpass was just closing. And still no sound from her, still no alarm. How long before she started screaming the house down? He raced down the gallery and entered the overpass. It was still pitch dark. He blundered through, reached the head of the stairs that led down to the music room, and paused again. Still no sound, no alarm. He went down the steps. The dark silence was terrifying. Why didn't she scream? Where was she? Reich crossed towards the west arch and knew he was at the edge of the main hall by the quiet splash of the fountains. Where was the girl? In all that black silence, where was she? And the gun. Christ, the tricked gun. A hand touched his arm. Reich jerked an alarm. Tate whispered, "I've been standing by. It took you exactly..." "You son of a bitch!" Reich burst out. "There was a daughter. Why didn't you..." "Be quiet!" Tate snapped. "Let me peep it." After 15 seconds of burning silence, he began to tremble. In a terrified voice, he whined, "My God! Oh, my God!" His terror was the catalyst. Reich's control returned. He began thinking again. "Shut up," he growled. "It isn't demolition yet." "You'll have to kill her too, Reich." "You shut up. Find her first. Cover the house. You've got her pattern from me. Locate her. I'll be waiting at the fountain. Jet!" He flung Tate from him and staggered to the fountain. At the Jasper room, he bent and bathed his burning face. It was burgundy. Reich wiped his face and ignored the muffled sounds that came from the other side of the basin. Evidently some other person, or persons unknown, were bathing in the wine. He considered swiftly. The girl must be located and killed. If she still had the gun when Tate found her, the gun would be used. If she didn't, what, strangle her? No. The fountain! She was naked under that silk gown. It could be stripped off. She could be found drowned in the fountain. Just another guest who had bathed in wine too long. But it had to be soon, soon, soon. Before this damned sardine game was ended. Where was Tate? Where was the girl? Tate came blundering up through the darkness, his breath wheezing.
"Well?"
"She's gone."
"You weren't gone long enough to find a louse, if this is a double cross."
"Who could I cross? I'm on the same road as you are. I tell you, her pattern's nowhere in the house. She's gone."
"Anyone notice her leave?"
"No."
"Christ, out of the house."
"We'd better leave, too."
"Yes, but we can't run. Once we get out of here, we'll have the rest of the night to find her. But we've got to leave as though nothing's happened. Where's the guilt corpse?"
"In the projection room."
"Watching a show?"
"No, still playing sardine. They're packed in there like fish in a can. We're almost the last out here in the house."
"Wandering alone in the dark, eh? Come on."
He gripped Tate's shaking elbow and marched him towards the projection room. As he walked, he called plaintively,
"Hey, where is everybody? Maria! Maria! Where's everybody?"
Tate emitted a hysterical sob. Reich shook him roughly.
"Play up. We'll be out of here in 5 minutes. Then you can start worrying."
"But if we're trapped in here, we won't be able to get the girl, will we?"
"We won't be trapped. A, B, C, Gus. Audacious, brave, and confident."
Reich pushed open the door of the projection room. There was darkness in here, too, but the heat of many bodies.
Hey! He called. Where is everybody? I'm all alone.
No answer.
Maria! I'm alone in the dark.
A muffled splutter, then a burst of laughter.
Darling, 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 Maria called. You've missed all the fun, poor dear.
Where are you, Maria? I've come to say good night.
Oh, you can't be leaving.
Sorry, dear. It's late. I've got to swindle a friend tomorrow. Where are you, Maria?
Come up on the stage, darling.
Reich walked down the aisle, felt for the steps, and mounted the stage. He felt the cool perimeter of the projection globe behind him. A voice called,
All right! Yeah, we've got him! Light!
White light flooded the globe and blinded Reich. The guests, seated in the chairs around the stage, started to whoop with laughter, then howled in disappointment.
Oh, Ben, you cheat! Maria screeched. You're still dressed!
That isn't fair! We've been catching everybody divinely fragranti.
Some other time, Maria dear.
Reich extended his hand before him and began the graceful bow of farewell.
Respectfully, madame, I give you my thanks for...
He broke off in amazement. On the gleaming white lace of his cuff, an angry red spot appeared. In stunned silence, Reich saw a second, then a third red splotch appear on the lace. He snatched his hand back, and a red drop spattered on the stage before him, to be followed by a slow, inexorable stream of gleaming crimson droplets.
That's blood! Maria screamed. That's blood! There's someone upstairs bleeding. For God's sake, Ben, you can't leave now. Lights! Lights! Lights!
That's the end of this side.